I have this working theory that there's a young generation of new managed services providers out there. And let's talk to one. Nick Larizio is the founder of Astute Technologists, and he joins me today to talk on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Today's episode is supported by Huntress. You want to focus on your clients and are always looking for ways to get more time. Use Huntress's fully managed cybersecurity platform to fight off cyber threats. Huntress is more than cybersecurity software for endpoints and identities. It's a 24/7 security operations center. It's security awareness training, community engagement, and dedicated partner support with an average CSAT score of 99.3%. Technology can only get you so far. Human expertise is what's needed to truly elevate and protect small businesses, and you get that with Huntress. Secure your clients and help them thrive with the number one rated EDR for SMBs on G2. Visit huntress.com/MSP radio to find out more. Well, Nick, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm really excited about the show and the opportunity to speak to your audience and talk a little bit about myself and also learn a little bit more about you and your background as well.
Well, you know, it's exciting to have to talk to somebody who's kind of come up through the MSP arc. Tell me a little bit about your career that led you to where you're at now.
Absolutely. So coming out of school, I was a business management and leadership major. And then I also double majored in management information systems. And like many coming out of college, you don't know what to do. So I partnered up with a small IT shop, knowing very little about what an MSP is, right? And how they play in the space and so on. But it was pitched to me as a great way to cut my teeth, work with multiple vendors, figure out what I like, and then go on from there and explore different things. So I worked for a small family-owned MSP that serviced primarily the greater Boston area. And then from there, I went to Thrive, which was a merger of two large of the largest MSPs in the Boston area. You had Corporate IT and Thrive Networks, which was Thrive was actually started by a 27-year-old, which was kind of inspiring to me, right? As a younger guy, fairly, you know, I had the 3 years at a small MSP, and then I wanted to kind of jump ship and have a bigger experience. So I went to the private equity backed space where we were growing through acquisition, which is very common today. Roughly 4 to 5 companies per year were coming into the Thrive household, if you will. And it was a really exciting, I learned a ton of material. A lot of things were happening really quickly. I got to come in and kind of talk to these owners that would stay on for 12 months or so, work with them directly on integrating their portfolio of accounts to the Thrive system, if you will, or on platform products and services. So if they were kind of leveraging one tool, or if they were using, let's say, Mimecast, and we wanted to switch them to AppRiver, something like that, right? So we would kind of streamline from an operational standpoint and get everybody on the same page. That was a great experience. I learned a lot. It's a lot of work working in the private equity world, and it moves really fast, and you're going to work long hours, you know, and it definitely, from there, I saw the benefit of being an owner, right? Because these owners would come in and stay on for 12 months and then go buy boats or new houses and things like that. So I said to myself, hey, if I really want to make it, I'm going to have to be an owner someday. I'm going to have to own something. And that inspired me to, and it was during the pandemic, right? So we were all remote. I got ahead. You know, I was a young gun. I had a book of business at the time of 100 accounts, right? And I converted the vast majority of them over to on-platform products and services, if you will. And I busted my butt. And whenever I got a chance of free time, I saw that as an opportunity to work on publishing my book, marketing myself and doing my personal brand and continuing to grow as a professional, both, you know, inside as well as outside of work. And that's where the idea of Astute Technologist was born. And I kind of started with a website, started with a few blog posts and published my book and went from there. And then I actually went back to enterprise. I went to work for Experian, the largest credit bureau out of the three. And I kind of focused on stopping and preventing fraud and coming up with new strategies and ways of doing that. because of how closely related that is to cybersecurity, which I'm excited to talk more about with you.
Well, what's the core idea behind Astute Technologists? Like, what's the why of what you're doing?
Well, I saw a number of problems with legacy MSPs that are 20 to 30 years old, and that's why a lot of them are selling, right? A lot of them kind of spun up, as you know, around the dot-com boom and haven't really changed their service model since, right? It's still a lot of, especially when you're at that 20 to 30 person, it's still a lot of break fix, still do hourly billing if they do that, right? It's a very kind of old model. I saw a number of challenges. First being, there's not really an aggregator or a good one that I could find that took the 20,000 MSPs and kind of pulled them together. It's still a lot of like channel sales. You know, if you Google most MSPs, you won't even see many Google reviews, right? It's a lot of word of mouth, a lot of long-term contracts, a lot of long-term business deals. So I saw that as a first issue. Second, I saw a lot of like the gig economy exploding, right? Services like Uber, where I could go to a fiverr.com and contract out, maybe even overseas, a network engineer at an hourly rate. So I saw that those opportunities were there for people who are in purchasing power to kind of outsource and leverage other places to get IT assistance. So I noticed those two things. And then I noticed a third major problem, which is all of these MSPs now who started as help desk, or, you know, maybe they're augmenting a company that doesn't have an in-house, or they're doing a function of the IT for a larger organization, right? So I saw that a lot of these help desks, essentially, who became, and they went to the cloud, who went to, when managed services became big, which was the start of a SaaS model, right? So they went through all of these changes over this 20 to 30 year period, and now they're all trying to be security companies. And I saw that as a major problem with a lot of AI now automating things like the password resets, or where's my file, or imaging of computers, you know, at the factory, as opposed to having to send somebody on site. So I noticed a tremendous amount of change happen really rapidly. And I said, now's a great time to start anew and build a new service model around it.
So it sounds like embedded in that is kind of, you think the premise that an MSP, a traditional infrastructure folks MSP, can't really make the leap to security. Tell me more about your thinking there.
Well, I think when a large portion of your time as an engineer is focused on troubleshooting, servicing kind of on-premise hardware, right? Maybe you have a private cloud and you're trying to compete with AWS, Azure, Google, right? Oracle. You're trying to compete with these massive players. A lot of them have become resellers, but the ones that do have their private clouds, that's a huge threat to their business, right? So I can really see them kind of struggling. And if they're not engaged in M&A, right, where they're able to kind of buy in and modernize, and then they're really, I don't see them surviving this next few years here, especially with the acceleration of AI adoption. So I see myself as a new player having a massive competitive edge today. Just like when these companies started in the dot-com boom, I see the same thing with the AI boom happening right this very second. It's kind of leveled the playing field, if you will.
So give me your insights then and how you see this all coming together. Like, what is your version of the future of cybersecurity, IT infrastructure, software development, and sprinkling a little AI on top of that? Like, how do these come together? Where do you think this is going?
Well, I still see your IT partner as a critical aspect of your business. You want to trust that person and know him intimately or her intimately. Really, it's going to that person. It's leveraging them, not for the help desk. It's having a business conversation saying, let's put a budget together. Let's look over the next 3, 5, 7 years. And what's that going to look like? And how do I reallocate my funds where things like help desk is being automated, right? And network support is things like auto config, where you can take a Fortinet and go to a Cisco Meraki and use auto deploy and take those configurations now with AI and replicate them to a new device, because that's old, end of life, whatever it is that drives the sale. Since so many of those functions where you're not going to get the 4 hours of high ticket labor for that work, you know, you need to show that value somewhere else. And that's really where I see cybersecurity services coming in, where you used to pitch cloud or disaster recovery. I see that really taking over as a trusted partner, a trusted instance of AI that might be not publicly accessible. So I see things like that having a lot more value today. And the other thing is moving away from that hourly billing, where you can charge like maybe a success fee or, you know, you have a one-time setup fee or something of that nature. But we have to get to a SaaS model. We have to get away from those kind of legacy practices, or you will not survive as an MSP, in my opinion.
So when Astute goes in to work with a customer, how are you positioning and offering your services?
Per user pricing, flat fee. Sure, things go up over time, just like an insurance bill, right? I think right now we're at $200 a month per user. So I don't even expect, when I talk to a decision maker, right? Sometimes it's a it depends, right? And you know this, but typically the decision maker is in control of the finance budget, right? It's a CFO, it's a director of operations, COO. Perhaps you're sitting in front of a board. That's rare, right? Maybe it's a CEO. That's also rare. But they have a big stake in the game. They probably own some of the business, or they're in control of the budget. That person, I don't always expect them to be the most technical. I don't expect them to, you're right, I want to come in and have a business conversation with that person. It says, how do we get to a SaaS model? Perhaps we look at your IT expenditures over the last 3, 4, 5 years, and let's break that out into a monthly. But from experience, I've seen, and I'm lean, right? I don't have a massive bench right now, but I've seen the per user pricing go anywhere, especially in my area, from $200 to $300 per seat per month. And I think that's very reasonable. And I don't expect the buyer to have all of this intimate knowledge of what's happening behind the scenes. I just want to give them a very simple structure that's easy to understand and replicable to go mass market, because that's where I want to take it eventually.
Now, tell me a little bit about what you put in your book, Digitalization, the New Normal of the Post-Pandemic World. What's your premise for what the digital world and digitalization looks like in this post-pandemic world?
Well, a lot's changed, right? And they say that 6 years of innovation occurred in the matter of 12 months, which is very accurate. And the world changed overnight, right? And just like 100 years ago when the Spanish flu hit, you know, and unfortunately, a lot of people lost their lives. And a similar thing, we had a 100-year fluke event occur. And I think it put a lot of us into survival mode. We were working long hours, and particularly in the IT space, things were very good, right? Business was booming, and people and folks that might have still had an on-premise server or software or applications that sat in an office, now we're forced to access them from anywhere, access their files from anywhere, work from anywhere. Otherwise, they would risk being sick. And the reality is, if you did not have those systems in place at that time, you need them in place today going forward to prepare for an event like that, right? Otherwise, you're putting yourself at extreme business risk. And we saw it firsthand how many people had to close up shop or were forced to sell, right? A lot of small MSPs even could not sustain with those big one-time projects. All those projects went on hold. The ones that did survive and thrive, if you will, they were able to sustain with that SaaS model. Sure, some had to go to collections, and some customers got behind on their payments, and they were going to close up anyway, and that's not good business, right? So really what I see happening is the SaaS model continuing to dominate, right? I see the acceleration of services like cybersecurity now that mass cloud adoption has occurred, right? The ones that didn't adopt cloud probably aren't still around. So all of these things have happened, and now it's like, what's next? So that's the big focus on cybersecurity. It's the big focus on targeting financial institutions, which I dedicate a whole chapter to in my book, which is really, they're the ones that are going to make the decision at the end of the day and for their portfolio on what their technology decision and partner looks like. So it's working with them closely. It's working with the financial institutions, the people with the budget control, And it's focusing on the SaaS model, focusing on cybersecurity services, leveraging a trusted partner as well.
So walk me through what that conversion for like one of your customers to move them to a SaaS model. Tell me what that looks like.
Sure. So I have no problem, you know, and I hope people feel comfortable with me and looking at the current technology budget. And oftentimes you'll ask that question and still the person doesn't really have a great understanding of what it looks like because things break and they have a lot of hardware, legacy hardware, and it's not necessarily always a predictable business model, which people in finance, as we know, love for to predictable, right? So how do we go from where you are now to getting to that predictable monthly fee and really committing to a 36-month term or a four-year term, as opposed to this kind of beat up your IT vendor, right? And it's kind of this like tension relationship. It's like, let's work together. Let's find a number that works well. And let's plan on doing this long term, right? So that it's a mutually beneficial agreement and not necessarily such a tense one, because nobody likes to have an unexpected server or cloud server fail. Or right now, it's always ransomware attack happens and it's too late. Your systems are compromised. You didn't be proactive in that approach and put something it implemented ahead of time. So that's a big conversation today. And hopefully you can develop that sense of trust with the buyer to get them to pull back the books on that.
And where are you at with the way you're thinking about and implementing AI in your processes, your organizations, and with your customers?
Well, a big challenge that I'm facing now, and this is something I'd really like to get to, you know, you look at companies like ConnectWise, right? They started out as an MSP and then they spun out into a software company selling to the 20,000 MSPs across the United States, which is a prime example. That's really where you want to be, right? With your background in SolarWinds, you can understand that you have a lot of power when you have some intellectual property and you have the keys to the software, right? So you give up a lot of that control when you partner with a lot of the RMM solutions out there today. So I want to bring that in-house as soon as possible, right? Leveraging the services revenue to kind of focus on that R&D budget a little bit and get that developed very quickly. Because quite frankly, a lot of the conversations that I have with the big players in the RMM space, and you know, they're still servicing a lot of that break fix. You know, a big thing that I would say to paint a good picture here is not one RMM I could find integrates with Azure AD. So I can't go in and say, okay, name your RMM tool. I'm not going to be a bully, but not one of them can tie into the Azure tenant and pull over all the user data and information without having some type of server somewhere, right? And for a long time, that was the bread and butter of an MSP, was selling these big high-ticket $20,000 SMB servers, whatever it is, right? So it's selling those, and then it's layering the management on top of it. But now we have a bigger challenge, which is, okay, we need to layer the management, right? Because at the end of the day, we're brokers. We're brokering Microsoft. We're brokering Oracle. We're brokering this technology. We're layering our servers on top of it. All the RMM tools, monitoring and management solutions, are not necessarily meeting the standard of where the market has gone, I would say. And we really need to get there quite quickly, I would say. So that's a major challenge that we're looking to solve and working on right now, which is, okay, let's tie in and let's hook into an Azure AD environment where they maybe have all SaaS apps and still provide third-party vendor management, still provide a level of service where we're, okay, you need a new user? Great, where are they? Are they at home? Are they in the office? Where are they? We'll ship it to them. It'll be imaged at the factory, have our logo on it. There you go. So it's not, you know, I'm not looking to grab those big high-ticket hardware sales anymore. I'm looking to leverage, and sure, we do provide that. We do offer that. But as we know, it's a highly competitive space and hardware is not the most profitable. So I'm not looking at that as my bread and butter. I'm saying, okay, let's leverage a 365. Let's layer services, administration services on top of it, and then package that deal.
Certainly an interesting vision in the future. Nick Larizio is the founder of Astute Technologists, and he's known for his expertise in cybersecurity, IT infrastructure, and software development with a focus on AI and IoT integration. He's the author of Digitalization, the New Normal of the Post-Pandemic World, which explores how technology is reshaping our world. Nick, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave. It's a pleasure, and I hope we stay in touch.
Today's episode is supported by CoreView. Your customers need your Microsoft 365 expertise, and CoreView has the only M365 management platform designed for MSPs. Manage hundreds of tenants, automate manual tasks, and monitor compliance, all while intelligently comparing to the baseline. With a no-code control approach, CoreView revolutionizes your Microsoft 365 administration. This powerful platform enables automatic reporting and remediation, ensuring optimal performance and security. The best part? You achieve this high level of service without the need for a large workforce, allowing you to focus on growing your business through efficiency. Want to know more? Visit coreview.com/MSP and find out more. The Business of Tech is written by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. This episode was edited and produced by Picture This Video. If you like the content, please make sure to hit that like button and follow and subscribe. It's the free and easy way to support the show and help us grow. You can also check out our Patreon, where you can join the Business of Tech community at patreon.com/MSPradio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. Finally, if you're interested in advertising on the show, visit mspradio.com/engage. Thanks for listening today, and I will talk to you again on the next episode of The Business of Tech.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.